We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio, the 5-star app, and Muse, the brain sensing headband that helps you meditate. I'm Patricia Karpus. The Muse headband and app can help you start a meditation practice or deepen your practice. And the Muse S was specifically designed to give you lots of meditations, visualizations, and features to help you sleep better. All great stuff. Check it out at choosemuse.com. Today, we have an episode with my co-host, Ariel Garten.
Hello and welcome to Untangle. Today, we have a really fun and interesting episode, different than we've done before. Today, we have Jessica Graham. She's an actress, a beloved meditation and mindfulness teacher, and the author of the book, Good Sex. Good Sex is a fun and informative guide that shows you how to bring mindfulness into sex for bigger, richer, and more present lives. Yes, today we're going to talk about mindfulness and sex. We are going to be going there, and we will give you some resources to come along with us in a way that's going to feel comfortable. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here with you.
Oh, it's super fun to have you here today. So before we get started, we haven't talked about sex on this podcast before. We're a mindfulness podcast. Can you give our audience some guideposts or pointers for this conversation?
Absolutely. So just hearing the word sex may have already created some sensation. There may already be a reaction at the body level. There may already be some mental activity arising. And so right off the bat, we can bring our mindfulness practice in and notice, oh, okay, this is what's here now. I'm having some contraction in my chest, or I'm having some butterflies in my stomach, or I'm having some thoughts of judgment or fear. And you can start by just noticing that that's what's here now. And that's a tool you can use anytime today. But another tool that I find incredibly supportive and something that can create a safe container for these kinds of conversations is a resource practice. And I borrow this from the work of Peter Levine and somatic experiencing. And it's a big part of how I work with my clients and how I work with groups and how I work with myself. And the idea is that you're bringing your focus to something that is not activated, something that is anywhere from neutral to really pleasant. So it could be that there's something in your body, like your feet on the ground, your butt on the seat, maybe some warmth or cool that feels pleasant somewhere. And you could focus your attention there. If that's not available or not interesting, you might focus your attention outward into sight. Could be just a neutral sight, your lamp, or a pleasant sight, the color of your bathrobe. I have a really beautiful bathrobe and I love the color. It's like in front of me so I can see it, and it's a resource. It feels good to look at it. You also might tune into a sound or create a resource in the mind, a positive affirmation, some sort of loving kindness or metta, or a positive image. So all of these are examples of resource, and there's endless examples. I could give many more, but these are some basic examples. And so I would invite you at this time, if you're interested, to bring your attention to one aspect of resource. And it might be something in your body. That might be a good place to start. So for example, maybe you're noticing the feeling of your hands on your lap. You just focus your attention there. Notice what's pleasant or neutral about that experience. Drawing attention away from activation without trying to stop the activation, without trying to resist it or deny it or push it away. No aversion is needed here. Instead, we just bring our attention back to resource. And this is a tool you can use anytime during this conversation. If something's feeling a little, you could just switch over to resource. Or of course, you can always pause and maybe come back to the episode later on. But resource is a great way to move through some of those activating moments. And for some of you, there's not going to be that activation. So if you're totally comfortable hearing about sex, fine. But we're all over the spectrum where that can land. And it's totally normal if it's activating just to hear the word sex. Because as a culture, we don't talk about it in ways that are, in my view, meaningful. And in the mindfulness world, we don't talk about it too much either. And that's something that I'm trying to change.
That's awesome. So thank you for the recognition that for some people coming to this episode, they're like, oh yeah, this is going to be awesome. Can't wait. Or what fun. And for some people, it's like, am I even allowed to listen to this episode? So
exactly.
Awesome. So Jessica, how did you get into the world of mindfulness and sex? It's a fascinating space and not one that, as you mentioned, we tend to find mindfulness teachers in.
Yeah. So from the time I was very young, I was very interested in spirituality and I was very interested in sexuality. I found it fascinating. And so my mom taught me to meditate when I was, I don't know, 4 or 5. And I was really into it. But I got really far away from it because I grew up in alcoholism and mental illness. And so I was on my own very young. And so the idea of sitting and meditating wasn't something that resonated with me. I was more trying to like get through life and didn't realize how supportive that would have been actually. But every once in a while, I'd find myself drawn to a quiet church or a beautiful place in nature. And I would get quiet and something would shift and I would remember. I would come home and then I'd quickly get pulled back into suffering and surviving and I would forget. But when I was about 27, I made some pretty big life changes and started a real path of healing, healing trauma, healing addiction, and moving into a really different chapter of my life. And that is when I was introduced to the work of Shinzen Young. And it really resonated. And I went from being someone who was like, I can't meditate. My mind is too full. I just think too much. And having people tell me way before the mindfulness boom, I had people saying, I think you need to meditate. Because I was just so stressed out all the time. But Shinzen's work just really resonated.
Shinzen's amazing.
Isn't he? Yeah, he's a really special human being.
Yeah, he's a friend and a friend of the podcast and has given me amazing guidance in my own life.
Oh, I love that. I love that we share him. Same for me. My life would look very different if I hadn't come in contact with him. He's been so incredibly supportive. Oh. Yeah. So I started working with mindfulness as taught by Shinzen. Within weeks, really, my life changed. And within months, I was just in a whole different paradigm. It was very fast. It doesn't always happen that way for people. It can be a very slow process, but for whatever reason, maybe it's past lifetimes, I don't know. I was just ready and everything changed. It was like being unplugged from the matrix. And there were definitely like challenging aspects, but for the most part, it was really amazing. And I was in a relationship at the time and thought, if food is better and sunsets are better and going to the spa is better and massages are better. Like, I bet this mindfulness stuff would really make sex amazing. And my background was I was always a very sexual person. I was always very sex positive. I was the person who my friends came to when we were teenagers to ask all the sex questions. I was a very happily sexual person. And there were drugs and there was alcohol and there were dysfunctional relationships. And I was often checked out, not necessarily in my body for sex. And I was now in my body in a way I never had been. And I was ready to explore that. And the partner I was with wasn't. That wasn't interesting to him at the time. So ultimately, I started exploring it on my own. So I'm going to say a word that might be activating. I started practicing mindful masturbation. So I started self-pleasuring using the tools of mindfulness. I started looking at erotic photos or erotica while using mindfulness meditation. I started exploring sensuality, movement, and the feeling of certain fabrics on my skin, and even visual stimuli that wasn't explicitly sexual, but was sensual, flowers, colors, and bringing mindfulness in. And it was pretty amazing. And during that time, I also realized I had some healing work to do. So I started some more healing work around trauma. And so when that relationship ended, I was really a different person. And I ended up in a relationship, which I'm still in today, 11 years later, and really had a sexual awakening. Like, it was just like, I'd always been a sexual person. But now this shift that had occurred for me on a psycho-spiritual level was moving into sex as well. And it was, I had no idea it was possible what I was experiencing. And so I started writing about it. I write for the blog Deconstructing Yourself. Michael Taft, he also has the Deconstructing Yourself podcast.
I know Michael.
So Michael's one of my best friends, and he was actually my first meditation teacher.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. He's a really also a very special human. So he had invited me to start writing for his blog. And when this shift in sexuality happened, I was like, I got to write about this. And so I started writing about it, and there was a big response because at that time, there was really nothing out there about sex and mindfulness. There was one book that was called Mindful Sex, and I'm sure it's been supportive to people, but it wasn't very comprehensive, let's say. Lori J. Brado was not yet known. So her book on sex and mindfulness wasn't out yet. There wasn't science being done around it, or maybe it was just starting to happen. And there certainly weren't meditation teachers talking about it. There was like One Taste orgasmic meditation, and there was certainly like all the neo-tantra stuff. But what I was interested in was mindful sex for anyone, for someone who's not interested in any sort of specific doctrine or dogma, somebody who might want to have sex with their long-term monogamous partner, or someone who might be really into casual sex with multiple partners and wants to bring mindfulness into it. So I wanted to be able to put something out there that was accessible and that could reach people who wouldn't necessarily resonate with some of the other things that were available. And the good news is that more people are talking about it now. Not a lot, but some. So that is really good news. But at the time, I couldn't really find anything about it. So I started writing about it, and there was a big positive reception. And that's how my book ended up becoming into the world. I was contacted by a publisher and asked to write it because they had found my blog. And so it was a thing that I guess it just wanted to happen. And so from there, writing the book and really beginning to work a lot with couples and people one-on-one in areas of mindfulness and spirituality and sex, but also all the branches of that as well. And so that's it in a medium-sized nutshell.
In a walnut shell. Fantastic. So what are some of the basic tenets of mindful sexual practice?
So one of the first things that I like to work with people around is pleasure awareness. We sometimes tend to feel like we shouldn't focus on pleasure in our meditation. I imagine that comes from a more monastic view, which has its place and its importance. And I think pleasure is so important, and we don't need to be afraid of it or worried we're going to become attached to it. It's a natural part of being human. And we already have the negativity bias. We're already looking for what's wrong. We're already dealing with various physical, emotional, mental pain. And it tends to be what we gravitate towards. So why not strengthen the muscle to move towards pleasure? And so I have folks do savoring of pleasure. So noticing pleasure throughout the day, savoring it. And then at the end of the day, writing down several moments of pleasure and then recreating it in their body using their minds. So using the mind as a tool to create feelings of pleasure in the body. And that way you get the pleasure twice. And this pleasure can be anything from having great sex to feeling really hungry and eating a delicious sandwich, or really needing to pee and peeing. It actually feels great when you have to pee and you pee. For some folks, it might be like feeling the sun on your skin when you go out to walk your dog, or sitting down and putting your feet up after a long day. All of these are just little moments of pleasure that are happening every day. And when we tune into them and really pay attention using mindfulness, we start to notice them more. And then we start to create a relationship with pleasure, which absolutely translates into our sexual experiences. Because for so many, there's a disconnection from the body during sex. And this can be for all kinds of reasons. Some of those reasons were actually really important. Maybe you stepped out of your body because of a trauma, or maybe you're dealing with chronic pain and being in the body isn't necessarily a great place to be. So pleasure awareness can start to help you to reacquaint yourself with the body and with the pleasure that is available in the body. It's also really helpful because so many of us get caught in our minds during sex, just like in meditation. So the same thing that a beginner meditator is saying, like, oh, I just keep getting pulled into my thoughts. And the teacher's like, that's okay. That's part of the practice. Just keep coming back to the breath or whatever it is. And it's the same thing with mindful sex. It's like, I just keep getting pulled into my anxiety about if I'm going to have an orgasm or not have an orgasm, or I'm getting pulled into how I look or my performance, or I'm just getting pulled into random thoughts about nothing, even though I want to be here, I'm getting pulled away. It's even built in. It's like men, people with penises are told, if you are worried about climaxing too quickly, then think about baseball or something. And it's like, why? Why would you want to be going off, unless that's your thing? Can you find that really sexy? Why would you want to go off into that rather than being here with your partner? Pleasure awareness can help us to stay in our bodies during sex and to be aware of what's actually happening there. And it can create more pleasure and more connection with your partner as well. So pleasure awareness, yeah.
Yeah, and I imagine one of the first tenets of pleasure awareness is permission for pleasure.
Yes. That actually sounds like a great name for a book, Permission for Pleasure.
Permission for Pleasure.
It's interesting because I work with a wide range of people, but when someone comes to me who has a maybe long-term meditation practice, has worked with a lot of teachers, is very dedicated retreat practice kind of meditator, there's often a period where we have to work on that permission for pleasure, because there's this sense of, well, if I'm focused on pleasure, then I'm somehow not going to find liberation because I'm going to be attached to it. And it's like, that's attachment itself. Avoiding pleasure is its own kind of attachment. So it's about a healthy and mindful relationship with pleasure. But yeah, the permission is so important. It's so important. And I see it with people of all genders. Also, it can be so vulnerable to be in touch with pleasure. It's so open and it's so soft. And when you're potentially like in a place of hypervigilance or something like that, for one reason or another, there can be a sense of, I can't slow down and feel in that way. It's not safe. And so there's also a kind of safety that wants to be cultivated. And that's why I always start with resource, because so much can come up just talking about pleasure, even non-sexual pleasure.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping, available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
What do you say to people who have this great sensation of not safety? Because I have the spidey sense that many, many, many people during sex have this sensation of not safety, either because we are brought up thinking that sex is not a good thing or we shouldn't be having sex, even if it's our partner or somebody might walk in, or am I allowed to be doing this, or past trauma that just comes up, whether it's subtle or not. I have a sense that like non-safety for many people predominates in their sex life.
Yes, it's the number one thing that I hear about. And I actually do a lot of trauma resolution work with people now. And it's something that's been part of my work for a long time because I had kind of an epic trauma resolution journey and went from someone with really acute complex PTSD to someone who, yes, that's still part of my story, but it doesn't affect me on a day-to-day basis. I don't get triggered in that way anymore. And so it's something I'm really passionate about. And because I'm working in the realm of sexuality, it's something that I needed to be very informed about. So I've done lots of studies around it, and I'm actually currently in this really amazing training. I've completed level one of a training called Rebloom, and it's with a woman named Rachel Maddox. And it's a kind of a combination of somatic experiencing, archetypal healing, and working ethically. It's a really phenomenal training. So just giving it a little pitch because it's amazing. And I'm definitely focused on continuing to expand my knowledge base and my skill base around working with trauma because it is the number one thing that shows up. So whether it's trauma or whether it's one of the other things that you mentioned around why someone might not feel safe, slowing down is so important. We push through that feeling of not feeling safe. I can think of many times I did that when I was younger, sexually and otherwise, which is like, nope, I'm doing this. Here I go. And I don't care that I feel afraid. And you know what? That can be great at times, feel the fear and do it anyway. But when it comes to being naked with another person, that's not a time to push through fear, in my view. That's a time to slow down, to pause, to get in radical consent with yourself, even if that means interrupting something that a big part of you wants to do, but some parts of you are not wanting to do. Those parts matter and they need to be listened to. And so slowing down and using mindfulness to actually be aware of the fear, to be aware of the sense of not feeling safe, is so important. And something that can happen when people first start implementing mindfulness into their sex and their sexuality is exactly what you're talking about. They can notice, oh my goodness, I don't feel safe. And I don't know if I've ever felt fully safe during sex. And so there can be a period of a painful awakening, but that's the beginning of being able to heal. And so going slow, lots of communication, very skilled support, coaches, therapists, teachers, and using resources. So trauma or not, using resources is really, really powerful, as well as using various kinds of communication tools and really learning to name what's happening, not just be aware inside of you, but to be able to say, oh, I'm noticing that I'm tightening up in my legs right now. And it feels like I'm not ready for this. Can we pause and maybe talk, or maybe do some massage for each other, or maybe do some eye gazing, or maybe just get up and have a dance party? Like, let's pause here. So learning to communicate with yourself through mindfulness then translates into being able to communicate with a partner.
You said an interesting word, which was radical consent. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So obviously this has been a big topic in recent years, and we've had a real cultural shift. And I personally really experienced a shift in my view of certain experiences that I had when I was younger, experiences that I didn't consider to be necessarily non-consensual, but was able to realize they were for a variety of reasons. And so I think in general, like, we're coming into a time where people are really looking at this in an incredibly meaningful way. So I'm really grateful for that. Consent, when it comes to the subtleties of consent, it starts with ourselves. I'm not going to speak of anything violent right now, and I'm not going to speak of the extreme kind of consent violations, but more of the subtleties, right? Like the, I didn't exactly want to do it, but I did it anyway kind of thing. The self-consent comes in there. And how do we have self-consent? Well, we have to know what's happening inside of us. Many listeners may have had that experience of, I just don't totally want to do this, but we've already started, so I may as well just do it. That would be the opposite of radical consent. Radical consent would be like, oh, I am aware of what's happening in my chest right now. Oh, and I'm feeling what's happening in my stomach. And this is my body saying no, and I'm not going to push through it. Or I'm noticing I want to get really drunk right now in order to do this. Well, that's not radical consent either. So it's about being really, really present and really mindful with ourselves and with each other. So you may notice with a partner, oh, they're not totally into this, but they're not saying they don't want to do it, so let's just keep doing it. Well, that wouldn't be radical consent either. It really is about paying attention to those small and sometimes very subtle cues and being willing to be brave enough, being willing to be compassionate enough, being willing to be like awake enough to say, oh, this doesn't feel quite right. Let's pause. Let's talk about it.
So that's a very familiar feeling that you describe. And it's interesting because sometimes the feeling arises when it's perfectly reasonable for it to arise. And sometimes it arises when it's really not reasonable for it to arise. And it's just like past stuff lingering around that's really not helping you in the present moment at all. It feels like those are the moments when you say literally like, fuck it, like, let's just move on with my life.
I totally get that. And actually, sometimes that is the right thing to do. I mean, I don't really think in right and wrong, but sometimes that is the right thing. I believe that we're all our own best teacher, our own best guide, our own best coach. And you have inside of you all of the wisdom of this universe and beyond. And so when we tune into that, we know what's true for us. Sometimes we also just have to say, F it. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to do this thing. And that's okay. There's nothing to judge about that. We do what works for us at the place that we are. And when we're willing to be like, yeah, I don't really want to deal with this, but it's worth it to me because the kind of well-being, the kind of joy, the kind of connection and fulfillment that I could experience if I address these little bits and pieces that haven't been resolved yet, it's worth it to step into that. And I know for me, my personal experiences, every time I was willing to lift up the hood and look at the things I didn't want to look at, my experience of being human expanded and evolved and lit up in ways I couldn't imagine. And I've seen it again and again with clients. It's phenomenal to see someone come to life in new ways when they're willing to address those things that they've said, just push it under the rug for years. It changes everything.
Yeah, overcoming your own blocks and those little things that have been holding you back forever is incredibly powerful. So, so powerful.
Yes.
What are some of the methods that you recommend to do that? That, I mean, it may not be a question you can answer because it's so varied for everybody.
Mm. Yeah, well, certainly meditation and mindfulness will help. If you start meditating, be ready to come in contact with the stuff you don't want to come in contact with. It's going to happen. And yes, you can use meditation to bypass all kinds of things, and that happens. You can use toxic positivity and spiritual bypassing. But eventually, if you keep sitting down with yourself day after day, this stuff can't hide forever. So it will come up. So if you're practicing meditation, like, it's going to come up. And when it comes up, certainly mindfulness and meditation can help. That's an important tool. But I'm a big believer in calling in the troops, like as many modalities as are supportive for you. So everything from therapy and specific modalities, right? Because it's not just therapy. It's like, what kind of therapy? And there are so many. There's internal family systems focused. There's EMDR. There's somatic experiencing. There's CBT. Like, it's endless, right? There's all of these different kinds. And to really do the research to find, like, what is going to be the one that's actually going to address what's coming up for me? And choosing a therapist like you would choose a life partner. You're not going to be with them for life, but it is a really important relationship. So that's important. Coaches, if it's somebody, a coach or a guide who's really skilled and has expertise in that area that you're working, that can be incredibly helpful. I worked with a coach around chronic illness because I have several chronic illnesses, and it was life-changing to work with someone who is specifically focused on that. So that can help. Body work, voice work, dance, communing with nature, like whatever you think might support, give it a try. And if it feels like, yeah, this is working, great, do more of that. Not everything's going to work for everyone. For some people, using an antidepressant is going to allow them to get into that material. For other people, using an antidepressant is going to have them avoid it or actually make them feel worse. So it's not one size fits all. And there's so many different ways to go. But I think the very first step is obviously that awareness, and then comes the acceptance, and then comes the action. And in the acceptance phase is also the self-compassion and self-love phase. And I will say that's probably the most important piece. It's like more important than anything else I just mentioned is, can I be with myself and say, oh, sweetheart, that's really hard. I can totally understand why you wouldn't have wanted to look at that until now. And I can understand you still don't. And it's really tough. And I'm here with you. And we're going to move at whatever pace works for you. And I love you so much. That works wonders, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah. I've actually been doing a big meditation study using focused attention meditation. I make a device called Muse, and focused attention meditation practice is one of its core elements. And what we've discovered in the study through the course of doing it is that focused attention is so powerful at being able to get people to notice when they're thinking about something else and being able to bring their attention back to the present moment, whether it's whatever that you're doing in that present moment. But when we add in the compassion piece, when we add in that self-compassion piece, it's able to do a deeper emotional unlock and a release of the tension and whatever you've been carrying. And so the addition of compassion practices, we've been using the compassion practices in our guided meditation collections. The addition of those compassion practices has really moved an individual forward. It's been phenomenal. And now for me, it's an essential part of any healing to add a compassion meditation piece.
Yes, I 100% agree. And that's what I've seen with myself and with others as well. And I know I'm so glad that you're exploring that work. And I know other folks are doing that as well. And it's so powerful and so important, and absolutely 100% comes into play when we're talking about sexual well-being and mindful sex. It's just such an important aspect of it.
So let's talk a little bit about mindful self-pleasure, because the idea of being with a partner may for some people be super fun and liberating and amazing. For other people, might bring up some stuff that makes it a little bit harder to move through. And these practices may be easier to begin to play with, pun intended, not intended, I don't know, on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, not everyone has a partner and not everyone wants a partner. Some people might be on the asexuality spectrum and they might not want to engage with others, but want to engage with themselves. Or you may have physical limitations due to illness or injury. So there's all kinds of reasons why you might work with self-pleasure, including what you just mentioned, which is probably the number one that I come in contact with, which is I'm not quite ready to have the conversation. I'm not quite ready to explore this with someone else. So yes, mindful self-pleasure or embodied self-pleasure or mindful masturbation, I like to call it sometimes. This can be a really, really great place to start. So once somebody has begun to create a relationship with pleasure, just everyday pleasure, noticing what feels good, actually becoming mindful of it in the body, being able to focus on it, then I like to shift into embodied self-pleasure. And so this can start as a non-sexual practice. And it is a practice. So you use a timer. You'll create a comfortable, cozy, sensual space and make sure you're not going to be interrupted. You may have candles or nice scents or something like that. But other than that, everything else gets put to the side. So when it moves into a sexual practice, a lubricant is definitely suggested if that's something that works for you. And by the way, there can be a lot of judgment around lubricant. And I'm just here to say, there is no need to judge it. It is a great tool for good sex. So you would put everything else aside though. You would put aside any kind of toys. You would put aside any sort of content. You would put aside any fantasy. Not because I think any of those things are wrong or aren't allowed to be involved in mindful sex, but just because they're not part of the exercise. You put them aside and it's just you and your body. And the way you would begin is just starting to explore your body with your hands. You would relax, breathe, and not feel any pressure to move into anything sexual. And so you'd just be trying different things with your body and seeing what feels good. So for example, I had a male client who I gave this exercise, and he came back and he said, well, it was amazing. The whole time I just stroked above my left pec, and it felt so good. And I did it for the whole 15 minutes. Did I do it wrong? No, that's exactly right. It's this, again, same thing with meditation. So often people new to meditation, the thought is I'm doing it wrong. Same thing here. It's like, I'm doing it wrong. No. If you are with your body and you are doing your best to keep coming back to the sensations in your body as you explore your body, you're doing it right. And eventually this practice can move into masturbation. And the suggestion is that you don't go right into whatever your thing is. Most people have a certain way they do it, a certain way they get off. The goal of this exercise is not about climax. If climax happens, that's great. If it doesn't, that's also great. It is not the point, and we're not driving towards it. So we're not locking the body up and being like, all right, I'm going to get it. No, we're actually relaxing into the pleasure and not grasping at anything, just enjoying the feelings in our body. So you would explore as if you've never touched your body before. And this can be a really pleasurable, enjoyable, sometimes funny experience. It can also be really cathartic. It can also bring up a lot. And so coming back to that theme of self-compassion, I always like to say that your embodied self-pleasure practice could be wrapping yourself up in a blanket, wrapping your arms around yourself and just being like, oh, I love you and you're safe and I'm right here with you. You're safe. That might be it, right? If that's what's needed in the moment. Or it might be like the wildest, most fun sex you ever had with yourself and anything in between. And when the timer goes off, because I suggest setting a timer for 10 to 15 minutes. When the timer goes off, I really like to have people journal a bit, just even just for a few minutes, just writing down what came up. And then let's say you finish journaling and you're like, I kind of want to get back into it. Then go ahead and grab your toys, grab whatever it is you like to use and have at it. Or you might want to just experience what's it like to have this sexual energy in my body as I move throughout the day. And it's a good idea to do this exercise about maybe 3 times over a week or two so that you can see the fluctuations and the arc of what happens. Just like any given meditation practice is different, any given mindful embodied self-pleasure practice is going to be different as well.
How do we move from here? Okay, so you've done the solo practice. How do we now bring this into an engagement with a partner? How do you actually bring mindfulness into sex?
Mm-hmm. So the first thing I want to say is that mindful sex gets to look like whatever mindful sex looks like for you. There is not a right way to have mindful sex. There's not a specific technique that you need to do or a specific way you need to feel or a specific kind of relationship you need to be in. And you really can't get it wrong. The idea is that you are present with the sensations, the sounds, the smells, the tastes, the thoughts, the emotions. You're with what's happening. You are aware of what is happening. And that's really the main thing, is that you are there, you are present for it. And that might mean coming in and out of presence, just like in a meditation practice, coming in and out of being present with sex, especially in the beginning, if you're someone who tends to be, you know, somewhat maybe disassociated or just not quite there. So it's a process. Letting go of the idea that there's a right way is a huge part of it. So you can just let go of that. Then communication is a really, really important part of any kind of good sex. And learning to communicate about sex is really challenging because we have atrocious sexual education in schools. Most of our parents couldn't comfortably talk to us about sex. We learned about sex in all kinds of ways that weren't necessarily that grounded in reality or grounded in self-compassion, certainly. There's a lot of secrecy. There's these overt ways that sex gets talked about, and then there's all these ways that it doesn't. For example, I have a confession to make. I've never really watched reality television, and for some reason recently, I was like, I think I need to watch The Bachelor. I need to understand. I need to watch it. I watched it. It was like an anthropology study. I was like, what is this? It was like so strange to me. But they go and have sex with multiple people. And like the general audience for this show are people who would be very offended by my work, for example. And so it's just so interesting the way that we talk about it and the way that we don't. And then that translates into how we talk about sex with our partners. So learning to talk about sex is really important when it comes to mindful sex. And so ideally, the first thing you do is you start having conversations. But for many folks, that's not going to be the most doable next step. It's not going to feel the most doable. It's not going to feel the most safe. So it's not going to be the ideal next step. You can start having mindful sex without ever having a conversation about it by simply bringing the tools of pleasure awareness that you've practiced, both in the savoring pleasure and in the embodied self pleasure, into sex with your partner. And so all you're doing is you're just going to keep bringing your attention back to what you're feeling. And for many people in the beginning, that's about bringing the attention back to the pelvic area, back to the genital area, because that's where the sensation is most obvious. But over time, you'll find that there is sensation throughout your body. And ultimately, you start to connect with your partner in ways that feel miraculous. The two becoming one thing is for real. And it takes time and practice. But once you start to get accustomed to paying attention to pleasure, it starts to become easier and easier to bring it in. And then it's just about, you don't want to be like on your own meditation island while you're having sex with your partner, but you can have some attention on what you're experiencing in your body. And over time, it'll get easier and easier to be there in your body and pay attention to your partner at the same time. So it's really the same principles as the most basic pleasure awareness. You're coming back to your body again and again and again.
And just like the promises of mindfulness, that you will expand the aperture of your awareness, that the world will seem a little bit brighter, that the light will seem a little more intense, the moment will seem a little bit more present. Presumably, so too does mindful sexuality enable that amplification of the experience of life in the moment.
That's absolutely right. Very beautifully put. And just like sitting down to meditate will bring your stuff up, mindful sex will bring your stuff up too. So you'll come in contact with maybe the thing you've been doing with your partner of 10 years actually doesn't work for you. Maybe it actually is painful. So many people of all genders experience pain during sex and never tell their partner, and they just push through it. So when you get mindful about it, it may become way less acceptable to be experiencing pain and not even talking about it. Same thing with if it's just not what turns you on and you've just been pretending, it's going to get harder to do that. And so that's good news. It can feel like bad news in the short term, but it's good news. And then, yeah, you're going to start to learn what you really, really love and start to open up to the endless possibilities. Because just like the spiritual path, in the way that I look at it, is endless. Certainly there are moments where things shift and everything changes, but then you continue. Like I like the way Shinzen talks about it. You have to continue to refine the human, regardless of how awakened you are. And so it's a never-ending path. Same thing with the path of sexuality, which I don't really see those paths as different. I don't see sexuality and spirituality as different paths, but sexuality is, it's endless. What it can look like, how it can be. For myself, my sexuality has looked so many different ways. And we get to evolve and we get to grow and change. And that's a beautiful thing. And mindfulness can help with that as well, can help us welcome in that continued expansion of what it is to be a sexual human being.
Thank you for this awesome conversation and for the inroads and the guides in and the permission to explore our own sexual awakenings mindfully.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure to chat with you about this.
Thank you. If people want to learn more about your work, find your book, where should they look?
Yes, you can find me at yourwildawakening.com. And you can also find me on Instagram at Jessica Clark Graham. That's my full name. My parents were hippies and gave me both of their names. And that's the name I could get on Instagram. So Jessica Clark Graham.
Awesome. It was such a joy and a pleasure to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was the awesome Jessica Graham, author of Good Sex, Getting Off Without Checking Out. You can check her work out at yourwildawakening.com. We'll have the links to all that in the show notes. And if you're wanting to improve your meditation and mindfulness practice and be able to be more in the present moment, check out Muse, the brain-sensing headband that helps you meditate and sleep. Muse gives you real-time feedback on your brain's activity during meditation, so you can actually know what's going on in your mind during your meditation practice, which then makes you more aware and what's going on in your mind throughout the rest of the day. Muse is an award-winning device used by hundreds of thousands of people globally. If you want to start or enhance and deepen your meditation practice, you should absolutely look into Muse. Also, Muse has brand new features that help you fall asleep and can help you fall back asleep if you've woken up in the middle of the night. Check it out at choosemuse, choosemuse.com. And you can use the Untangle discount code MUSESTRESSLESS. Wishing everybody a wonderful day and a wonderful night.